This sort of came up in our bi-weekly Bible study. We've been going through the book of John. And when we come to chapter 12, we begin to see something that I think has a lot of relevance to this season of the year. There are people, in fact, it's the vast majority of Christians who hold the view that the crucifixion was on a Friday. Now, John intersperses details that the other gospel writers left out. For some reason, he saw the need to infill what the other writers had already written. He wrote much later than them. The three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, were written probably in the 60s AD, almost a full generation after the actual events. But John wrote much later. He was another 30 years later than that when he wrote the Gospel of John. And he saw gaps, I think, in the other writers, and he filled them in. And at the same time, he didn't cover all of what they covered. But when you put them all together, when you harmonize them, and there's books, particularly Fred Coulter's book on the harmony of the Gospels, that has done that, we can begin to get a picture that answers a lot of questions. The main question is, when did the crucifixion take place? And does it really matter? Well, we'll see that it does. John saw the need to give us a framework around which we can trace those last 6 days of Christ's physical lifetime by adding a component that when we put it all together, we can see what happened every day. And when we see what happened day by day, the relevance of the particular things that he was saying are increased. John has this proclivity in his gospel to mention holy days. In fact, when you study the book of John, you realize that virtually everything he wrote is time-related to a particular holy day. There's a holy day theme in the Gospel of John. It begins, for example, these are not every case, but just for example, there's a reference to a holy day season in chapter 2, verse 13, and again in chapter 2, verse 23. Then again in chapter 4, verse 35. In chapter 5, verse 1. In chapter 6, verse 4. In chapter 7, verse 2. In chapter 7, verse 10. In chapter 10, verse 22. 11:55, chapter 12, verse 1, and chapter 20, verse 17. There's 12 places where John ties his gospel to a holy day. So that most of what he's writing and most of what Christ is saying is in somewhat of a holy day context. And it's important to understand that. But John's gospel, like I say, infills what the others didn't emphasize so much. And he has four major areas. The first is Christ's divinity. He begins with that in the first chapter. And you'll notice he sort of concludes with that same theme, emphasizing Christ's divinity. And then the second item is, of course, this holy day theme that we've been talking about. But John does some other interesting things. He gives us a formal name for the last great day and a formal name for, what we call the last... The reason we use the term the last great day is because of this one place that John uses that term. It's in chapter 7, verse 37. We would be calling it, I suppose, the eighth day. Under any other biblical reference except for John. What's especially interesting about the book of the Gospel of John is that almost a third of the gospel is devoted to what we could call the Passover narrative. There are 8 whole chapters written about what occurred in a span of 6 or 8 hours. It's a tremendous amount of information, but it's in the context of those hours leading up to the crucifixion. So those are the things that the Gospel of John adds to our understanding. But it's the 6 days that are interesting, because from that framework, we can harmonize it and all the other Gospels and understand what he was doing day by day. It gives us another way of proving that the crucifixion was not on a Friday. When we walk through day by day, we can see that it would have been impossible. Now, most of the time when we discuss this issue, we focus on the various scriptures that make reference to 3 days and 3 nights. That is the typical approach for proving that the crucifixion did not occur on Friday. Now, you're aware of Dell's little helper here. It's a sort of a slide format. And I'm saying this more to the people that are listening online that may not be aware of this. We are aware of it because it's been here on display for many weeks. But this deals with all of those scriptures that talk about the 3 days and 3 nights. And that's fine. And if you don't have one of these, you might want to have one in case there's somebody you want to talk to about it or convince. Or if you're not convinced yourself, this would be a good tool to use. But I want to look at it from another angle, because there's other ways of proving the same thing. Let's take, for example, well, let's look at those 6 days. 6 days before Passover, he came into the Jerusalem area. He didn't go fully into the city. He was traveling up from Jericho, which is, on a good day, at least a 7 or 8 hour hike. Now, let's take, for example, if someone were to insist that the crucifixion was on, was on Passover. We know it was on Passover day. I don't think there's anybody that disputes that. But 6 days before a Friday would be a Saturday. So if Christ came to the area 6 days before Passover, that has to conclude that he and his disciples were hiking for 7 or 8 hours all day on a weekly Sabbath. How likely is that? Now, if the Jews were ready to condemn Christ for healing a man on the Sabbath, don't you think they would have criticized him for spending the whole day walking on the Sabbath? They would have known, because they knew he was there and many people went out to see him. They would have known that if it were true. But just as a piece of information, just as one of the details, that's something that we would have to conclude if the crucifixion were in fact on Friday. So what John gives us reason to look closer at the matter. Now, we know that the crucifixion, or we know that the Passover, was the 14th day of the first month. The day before would have been the 13th. 2 days before would have been the 12th. 3 days before would have been the 11th. 4 days before would have been the 10th. 5 days before would have been the 9th. 6 days before would have been the 8th of Nisan or Abib. If the crucifixion were on Friday, Nisan 8 would have been a weekly Sabbath. Now, what happened on that day? according to the scriptures and according to the accounts that John gives us, he and the disciples came up to Bethany from Jericho area. We know he was in Jericho by the Zacchaeus incident, which also gives us a time frame. But he approached Bethany from the east, from the Jericho area, and we can read of that in John chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. They would have been walking most all of the day. It took most of the daylight part of the day to do that. So they would have arrived Thursday using a Wednesday crucifixion. They would have arrived Thursday mid to late afternoon. And that's where they stayed with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, whom he had previously resurrected. Mary and Martha prepared a supper for him, not knowing he was coming. He couldn't call ahead. They didn't do that. Didn't email or anything. So we have in the narrative that they ate a meal. They prepared a supper for him, and his feet were anointed. That was Thursday night. He stayed over with them Thursday night. Now, where people make a mistake is presuming that the very next day he went into Jerusalem. And that's where the Friday crucifixion people come up with the idea of Palm Sunday. It doesn't really work. Now, keep in mind the other things you have to factor in to get to that. Because the scripture says, John chapter 12 says, that the next day he remained in Bethany, and the people from Jerusalem heard that he was there, and it was only a mile and a half away. It wasn't, you know, that big a deal. But the people in Jerusalem heard that he was there, and they went out to see him there in Bethany. He didn't go in the next day. They rested that next day, which would have been a Friday. It wasn't till the next morning when he went into the city. That would be the 10th, and that was on the Sabbath. Now, I'm giving you this outline now so that when we go and read through that section, we'll begin to see these things. But it was on the Nisan 10, the weekly Sabbath, that he went into Jerusalem. So really, Palm Sunday is Palm Sabbath. That's what we can begin to understand from what John gave us. And we read of that in John chapter 12, verse 12. That was when he made the triumphal entry. Compare that with Matthew 21, 8 to 9, and Mark 11, 8 to 9, and Luke 19, 38 to 39. It was on that day also that he wept over Jerusalem. It was during that procession. Luke 19 tells us that. He toured the temple and returned to Bethany. And all of these are in the gospel accounts. On that particular day, many people were involved with their lamb selections. This was the 10th of the month. That was the day that they were to select their lambs. Christ was selected by the procession, the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Christ was selected as the Lamb on the 10th, which happened to be the weekly Sabbath. See, from John's information, we can put all of these other Gospels into their correct context. The next morning, he went back into Jerusalem. This would have been Sunday. On the way back in is the day he cursed the fig tree. Sunday was the day he overthrew the money changers. And then it says in Matthew 21, 17 that he returned to Bethany that night. Nisan 12, Monday. Early morning he went back into Jerusalem. Mark 11, 20 tells us that. And on the way in, they observed the withered fig tree that had been cursed the day before. It was the day when he uttered that statement that this mountain will be thrown into the sea. It was the day that the authority was challenged of the religious leadership of the day. It was the day he taught the people parables, the parables of the two sons, the parable of the vineyard and the laborers in the vineyard, the parable of the wedding feast. Remember that, where he called people to come to the wedding and all of the logical invitees were busy, had to do other things. So he went out in the highways and byways and called others to the wedding feast. That particular story was told on Nisan 12, a Monday. And then the Jews approached him and trying to trip him up to get him to say or do something that would warrant him being arrested and tried and hopefully convicted. What I call the entanglement conspiracy, the deliberately conspired to go and trip him up. It was still on this same Monday, Nisan 12, that he uttered the sayings, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's." They questioned him on multiple marriages and the resurrection. Whose wife will she be? That was on that same day. The two great commandments, Monday, just before his crucifixion, a few days. Psalm 110, this is the one that got him in trouble. "The Lord said unto my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool." That little incendiary remark was uttered on Monday, Nisan 12. And that was also the place where he said, "Beware of the scribes and Pharisees." He was getting in pretty deep at this time. The narrative about sitting in Moses' seat, whatever they command you to do, whatever they command you to observe, that observe and do, but don't do after their works. In Matthew 23, that was on this same day. And the final comment was the widow's mite. That too was on Monday, Nisan 12. And then he left the temple area, and on the way out of that temple area, he and his disciples heard, or he spoke and they heard, the Olivet prophecy. This is all on Monday, Nisan 12. The Ten Virgins parable was on that day. The parable of the talents was on that day. And the final thing in Matthew 25 of the parable of the all nations judgment, where all nations will be called to be judged, the sheep from the goats, in other words. All of that was on Monday. Then the Hellenist Jews came to speak with him. This was a group, apparently, of Greek converts, Greek proselytes, Greek ethnicity, wanted to speak with Jesus. And the word got up and he met with them. And right after that, he was overcome with anxiety. We read of that in John 12:23-27. And that's the place where he said, "The Father glorifies the Son." And there was this thunderclap. People heard it. And from that point in time, he realized that he needed to hide himself. And it says he hid himself. It doesn't say where in John, but the other Gospels tell us he spent the next night or two at Simon the leper's house. Now that was in Bethany also. But no self-respecting Jew, especially with holy days approaching, would dare go and enter a leper's house. So he was safe there, safe from being discovered. But all of this has to do with his careful orchestration of getting a condemnation at the right point in time. Because the Jews were out to kill him for more than a year. We can read of that in John, the Gospel of John. There was a long time conspiracy to entrap him and to catch him and arrest him and kill him. So he sensed the atmosphere of what was going on at the time, and he hid himself from that point on. From late in the day on Monday, he wasn't heard or seen of the general population again until late on the day on Tuesday. That's when he sent his disciples in to set up the Passover service. He told his disciples to go into the city, and you'll see a man carrying a water pot. Big city, wouldn't there be hundreds of men? How do you know which one? Well, it wasn't a man's duty. It wasn't a man's job to carry water. That was always a woman's job, with the exception of water necessary for a religious ceremony. So to see a man carrying a water pot, they would have known something. This is a guy who's preparing for a Passover service. And to be doing so on what the Jews would call the wrong day, a day too early, they would know that this is a man who observed the alternate tradition, which is one of the things that's brought out in that Passover booklet. There are two traditions. One was the majority tradition, and one was the minority tradition. That this man was going to keep the Passover, or he was at least preparing a place for someone to keep the Passover the day before the typical Jewish Passover. So they went in on Tuesday, or Christ went in on Tuesday evening. The disciples went in earlier, but Christ went in on Tuesday evening, and that's when they kept the Passover. Some people object to that term, thinking, oh, this was just a supper. Well, it wasn't just a supper, and we'll see why. And there's a reference that tells us it wasn't just a supper, where it says, and the hour was come. It was an observance that had a specific time-related hour. It wasn't just any time. If it were just a meal, you could have eaten it any time. It didn't depend on the hour having come, a specific point in time. And that's like when we keep the Passover. We wait until a specific hour relative to sunset. That's what they did. Christ kept the Passover as the 14th day. I'm sorry, as the end of Tuesday, as Wednesday was just beginning. Days begin at sunset. So Christ kept the Passover as the 14th day was just beginning with his disciples. People like to use the term the Last Supper or communion, because a communion service is basically based on this event. But it's only called the Lord's Supper once, and it's called communion only twice in the same place, in the same verse. But it's called the Passover 10 times, at least, that I could find. So it correctly was the Passover. And that's how people dismiss it, by saying, well, it wasn't at the time that the Jews kept the Passover. Well, true, it wasn't. But their tradition had a different origin. But from John's 6 days, we can put together a whole narrative of what happened on each of those days. Let's read through that passage now that I've given you the outline of it. And we should keep in mind that the scriptures, you know, this is a rather voluminous book. The scriptures weren't meant to just throw in a lot of infill. It isn't like, you know, a modern writer who might find that he doesn't have enough to fill out his article or his magazine or whatever, and he adds in some stuff just as filler to increase it so it fills the page and looks nice on the page. That isn't what the Bible does. The Bible, everything written, if you look at it carefully, every piece of information has significance. We tend to read over things quickly, and we miss a lot. And that's what study is for. If we take and go through it carefully, if we read it and then go back over it and look into it carefully, we begin to see a lot more relevant information than we do on just the first pass. Hopefully I've given you enough information now that when we read John chapter 12, we can begin to pick up on a lot of these points that aren't obvious in just a casual reading. So let's go to John 12, and let's look at what it says. Then Jesus, 6 days before Passover, came to Bethany where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. And Bethany from Jericho was about 13 miles, which would have been 6 to 8 hours traveling. He had been in Ephraim prior to that, John 11:34 tells us. But he came to Bethany in the afternoon of Thursday. He enjoyed a meal and remained in Bethany all the next day. Remember, we said that. Verse 2, there they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then said one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? And he said that, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. That was John's opinion of Judas. Then said Jesus, let her alone. Against the day of my burying has she kept this. For the poor always you have with you, but me you have not always. Alluding to his pending crucifixion. That was Thursday the 8th. Friday, he remained there in Bethany. You don't get that from the text necessarily, but verse 9 tells us what happened on Friday. Much people of the Jews, therefore, knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. So the next day, after arriving late in the day on Thursday, they spent Friday resting there in Bethany. And verses 10 and 11 gives us a little picture of the climate of what was going on among the priests in Jerusalem. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death. They'd already had a plan to put Jesus to death, but now they're bringing Lazarus into the picture because of many people believing because of that. Because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. So Lazarus, both in the fact of his having been raised and apparently from his own witness, was very effective with the people. Verse 12 now, the next day, this is the 10th, this is the Sabbath. On the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they'd heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees, this is Palm Sabbath, and went forth to meet him, and cried, Hosanna, blessed is King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. They are accepting their Messiah. They are identifying their Passover on the 10th. That was the day the Paschal lambs were selected. Typically in the morning of the 10th. There was an important reason for that, but especially in the first Passover in Egypt. But that's another story. They took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. And Jesus, when he had found a young ass, sat thereupon, as it is written, Fear not, daughter of Zion. Behold, your King cometh, sitting on an ass's colt. These things understood not his disciple at first, but when Jesus was glorified, then remembered they that these things were written of him, and that they had done these things unto him. The people, therefore, that was with him when he called Lazarus out of his grave and raised him from the dead, bear record. For this cause the people also met him, for that they'd heard that he had done this miracle. The Pharisees therefore said among themselves, perceive ye how you prevail nothing. Behold, the world is gone after him. Now verse 20 and 21 relates the meeting that he had with certain Greek proselytes. This is a day or two later. And there were and the other Gospels identify when this happened. I read that to you earlier. And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. Now it's interesting when you read the account of Pentecost, of all of the ethnicities and the different languages that were gathered in Jerusalem to observe Pentecost, that it doesn't mention Greeks for some reason. But here there were Greek people who wanted to meet Jesus. So these people came to Philip, verse 21, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, sir, we would see Jesus. So Philip passed the word on to Andrew, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. So he had a meeting with these Greek-speaking proselytes. For whatever reason, we could only speculate. Verse 23, and Jesus answered them. Now this is another conversation. The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abides alone. But if it dies, it brings forth much fruit. He that loves his life shall lose it. And he that hates his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? Is he going to ask the Father to change the plan? No. But for this reason came I into this hour. Father, glorify thy name. Then came there a voice from heaven saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. That is what certain people heard. They heard the words. But the other people around, the people therefore that stood by and heard it, said that it thundered. It sounded like thunder to them. Others said, an angel spoke to him. Jesus answered and said, this voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. Once Christ had been validated as the Lamb of God, as the Passover, for the people that he and his Father would call, that's when the judgment of the world began. Not judgment in the sense of condemnation, but judgment in the sense of evaluation. We need to understand the distinct components of judgment. Now is the judgment of this world, verse 31. Verse 32, and if I be lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men unto me. This he said, signifying what death he should die. The people answered him, we have heard out of the law that Christ abides forever. How do you say that the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Then Jesus said unto them, yet a little while, the light is with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walks in darkness knows not whither he goes. While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may be the children of light. These things spoke Jesus, and departed, and did hide himself from them. So that was the final exchange with the population. That ended the 12th. He hid from that point on until he was apprehended in the garden. the Passover service that he and his disciples observed were not public events. Nobody knew about that. Nobody knew he was there, except maybe the man that rented him the place. He wasn't in public again until he was arrested at midnight the next day. And then the rest of this, from verse 37 down to the end of the chapter, is a general narrative. Apparently is when he was speaking with his disciples. And then we come to chapter 13. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, so we now know that this is Wednesday evening, the part of the day that begins Wednesday after sunset, on Wednesday, the day of the crucifixion. So from this on, that is when the Passover narrative begins, what he was saying to his disciples. So we know that there was a sequence of events. Many things that happened, a tremendous amount of scripture that we read, were all relative to this 6 days. And then, of course, Passover Day accounts for an 8 full chapters in the book of John, let alone the others. So there's a tremendous amount of information that was put to pen, that was written down, within a very short period of time. So I think it helps us to understand the events and the context of many of these narratives that were given. Now, with a Friday crucifixion, you have to think carefully, with a Friday crucifixion, he would have been put in the grave Friday moments before sunset, and that sunset would have begun the weekly Sabbath, would it not? Of course. Now the Jews wanted to have a watch set. The Jews then went in to talk to Pilate and get permission to have a Roman guard placed at the tomb, to have the tomb sealed. Well, Pilate says to him, you go seal the tomb. You have your watch. He would provide the watch. But he wanted them to go seal the tomb. Now, with a Friday crucifixion idea, when would they have done that? Number one, would the high priests have gone in to talk to Pilate on the Sabbath? Now, keep in mind, with the Friday crucifixion idea, it's not only the Sabbath, it's a double Sabbath. It's a double Sabbath. It would have been both a weekly and an annual Sabbath, what we call the first day of unleavened bread. They called it the whole week Passover for some strange reason. And then we see scriptures that talk about calling Passover Day one of the unleavens or one of the days of unleavened. They got it backward. I don't know how the Jews do that, but they call the whole week Passover, and they call the day before one of the days of unleavened bread. What? But that was the tradition of the time. And it's reflected in the scriptures, but we need to filter it out and understand. If the watch was set, when was it set? In a Friday crucifixion context, when would it have been set? The chief priests would have had to go in to see Pilate to get permission to do this. What, on the Sabbath day? They wouldn't have gone in at night during the dark. They would have been observing their Passover at that point in time. That's when they kept their Passover, at the end of the 14th day, going on into the 15th. So the chief priests would not have deferred their Passover observance to go see Pilate. So it would have had to be the next day. Well, the next day, during the day, during daylight, was a double Sabbath under that scenario. I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying, let's think like a Wednesday crucifixion person for a moment. They wouldn't have gone in on the Sabbath. They would have gone in the next day. Whoops. Next day was Sunday. He was already risen by that time. That wouldn't have worked. It doesn't work. When you think it through, it doesn't work. Only the truth works. Now, Pilate said to them, "You go seal the tomb." They had to do the work of mortaring in that rock so that it couldn't move. Would they have done that on the Sabbath? Again, very unlikely. Would Christ have walked all day from Jericho to Bethany on the Sabbath, which 6 days before would have been? Highly unlikely. Any thinking person has no reason to believe the traditional story about the crucifixion being on a Friday. There's too much in the New Testament that disproves all of that. It doesn't take rocket scientists to go that from Friday, 6 days before, would have been a Saturday, would it not? Did anyone ever think of that? I've never heard this brought out before. Maybe someone has. I don't know. But it's interesting that there are many points of information that we can collate together and realize that there is an alternate narrative that tells us the truth about what happened and when it happened. But we also can look at those and see on which day those events or those particular narratives happened, because it adds to the overall impact of what was said, knowing when it was said. The widow's mites. Do we realize that was the last thing that Christ said in the temple before he left? That she, with her two mites, was giving more than all of these other people throwing in handfuls. Because it wasn't the amount of money, it was what was in the heart in that gift. That was the last thing he said. I think it amplifies the meaning of that to understand when it was said. But when you understand about the watch having been set, we can also see that it could not possibly have been a Friday crucifixion. Now, that's another thing that John tells us. He tells us that particular Sabbath was a high day, not a weekly Sabbath. Why doesn't the world comprehend that? The world doesn't know anything about the holy days. That's the problem. They don't teach the holy days. So they have no clue that Passover is followed by a high day. We know that. It's obvious. I mean, sure. But the world somehow doesn't register. When someone wants to think of a Friday crucifixion, they have to answer in their mind, when did the annual Sabbath, on which day did the annual Sabbath occur? Well, it had to be coincident with the weekly Sabbath. But there's a problem with that, because we have scriptures that show that the women, after the burial, after a Sabbath, doesn't say which one, went and bought spices, spent the day preparing them, and then rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. That tells us there was a day in between. These women went to the market, which wouldn't have been open especially in Jerusalem, on a high day or on a weekly Sabbath. But they went and they bought the necessary spices. They did the preparing work for it that was necessary, intending to go the next day to complete the burial process, which, of course, didn't happen. He was raised by then. But they went on Sunday, early in the morning, before it was light. And that's when they found the tomb already open. It had been sealed. So we have many, many reasons to prove, other than just the 3 days and three nights accounts, which all confirm the same thing, but we have many other reasons to understand that the crucifixion was not on a Friday. as we understand it, it was on a Wednesday. And when we place it in its right place, would have made Thursday the high day. That's when the Jews were keeping their Passover late on the day before into the next day. That would have been the high day, like John calls it. Friday, the preparation day, which another scripture calls it, they would have gone in to see Pilate to get the tomb sealed and the watch set up. So they sealed the tomb on Friday, which was not a high day. They got the soldiers there on Friday. And they were there from Friday through Saturday into Sunday morning. That works. The other idea doesn't work because there's no time and place to seal the tomb and set the watch on a Friday crucifixion. Unless they were to violate a double Sabbath to do it. And how likely is it that the high priests would have done that? When they're criticizing Christ for healing a man on the Sabbath and they'd go do that themselves, I don't think so. So we have ample evidence of when the crucifixion was. John's narrative helps immensely to be able to put it all together. And like I say, this will be I'll have this ready in written form maybe in a week or two if anyone wants to look at it carefully. I've thrown out a lot of information. I haven't given you a lot of verses. We haven't read a lot of verses, but I think we can get the picture. You can certainly study this on your own as you want to, as you feel it relevant. But keep in mind, the Gospels were written for a purpose. We shouldn't have unanswered questions. There is so much information about the events that led up to Christ's crucifixion. So hopefully this information is of interest to you and maybe a good basis for placing into context the things that we're going to be reading in the next few days and weeks.